Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. We're doing another show with the National Criminal Justice Association as we examine exemplary programs throughout the country. The National Criminal Justice Association works with corrections, law enforcement, people throughout the criminal justice system to examine and to bring to light some of the better programs throughout the country. The program today is 100 Days and Nights of Summer, and we're going to be talking to the Deputy Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Public Safety, and we're also going to be talking to Captain Greg Toya with the New Mexico Department of Public Safety, Division of State Police. And we're going to be talking about alcohol-related fatalities, the fact that they're down and down dramatically in the state of New Mexico. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for all of your comments. We really appreciate the fact that you let us know how you feel about the program, suggestions about the programs, criticisms, complaints, and accolades. So keep those comments coming in at media.csosa.gov, or simply search on your internet search engine for DC Public Safety. We respond individually to every inquiry, every comment that you make, and we appreciate them. So on with the show, 100 Days and Nights of Summer, again, introducing Deputy Secretary Paul Cook of the New Mexico Department of Public Safety and Captain Greg Toya of the New Mexico Department of Public Safety State Police, again, through the auspices of the National Criminal Justice Association, to talk about 100 Days and Nights of Summer. And to Paul Cook and to Greg Toya, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, I am a former Maryland State Trooper. You and I were talking, we were all talking before the program. And, you know, the thing that bothers me about alcohol-related fatalities is that we in the criminal justice system have got to climb into these cars and pull people out. We make the death notifications. We grab the minister or the rabbi or the imam and knock on somebody's door at 3 o'clock in the morning to tell them that their loved one has passed due to an alcohol-related fatality. And we in the system get very emotional about it, yet I don't see that emotion carried by general society. So first of all, the issue of alcohol-related fatalities, we take it extraordinarily seriously. Does the rest of society take it extraordinarily seriously? I guess that's the question we're going to start with. Greg, do you want to give a shot at that?
Well, I think that is the case, and I think that it takes the efforts of law enforcement, the judicial system, of course, various counseling groups out there, public health service, to bring the horrific stats and data to the public's attention as it relates to injuries and deaths and how that touches individual families. And I think once the public starts to understand the horrific scenes that are the result of a DWI-related fatality, it'll eventually mean something to all levels of the general public, and hopefully start to bring down those horrific numbers nationally. And of course, here in New Mexico, I think it has worked.
The first fatality I ever saw was a cadet riding with a trooper on Route 40 in the state of Maryland, where it was a decapitation. And I won't go into the full details, but, you know, as a young man, that affected me. It affected me very deeply. And the truck driver who hit them as they pulled out in front of them, the driver was drunk. You know, that's something that stays with you for a long time. And yet you tell other people that you were just involved in a fatality, in fact, two fatalities, in fact, a decapitation, and their response would be a hearty chuckle. So we experience it firsthand. We notify the families. I've just never been convinced that the larger society understands what's actually going on out there. Paul, do you want to take a shot at that one?
Well, you know, I wanted to say that I think that the public education is an extremely important part here. And the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers started out doing a lot of advertising. We here in New Mexico do advertising, and we have posters and billboards. Basically, the motto is, you drink, you drive, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's focused on just that, the drunk drivers, the inebriated individuals who decide to get behind the wheel. And we set it up so these people kind of understand this is not a laughing matter. You get caught, you're going to jail, end story.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really, I think, started to get people to think, you know, who's the designated driver, or do I actually need that second drink, or whatever, before they leave and drive home.
It's a very complicated societal issue, but one of the things that we in the criminal justice system are responsible for is catching them, and to reduce the amount of DWI accidents. When you started this program, Greg, New Mexico was third in the country, and you're now 17th in the country for DWI-related accidents and fatalities. That is a huge decrease, and over what time period are we talking about, and how'd you do it?
Well, I think if you compare the 2006 statistics with current stats, typically during that time period, our statistics go down by about 15%. There's a number of components involved in doing that. And again, it's not only the state police doing that, it's all the agencies working together that implement DWI checkpoints. DWI patrols for concentrating parts of the roads that are historically high in DWI-related accidents. In addition to DWI, though, we issue a lot of other enforcement citations along the lines of keeping the general public safe, you know, a seatbelt citation, child restraint citations, and various other things. But we've increased our DWI arrests from a little over 2,000 during the 100 days and nights of summer every year over the last 3 years. We've had, again, saturation patrols, 140 a year during that period of time. That's a lot of work to do. And we like to think of it as we bring public awareness into this whole issue, bring on a lot of other law enforcement agencies to help out. We're out there in the general public's eye, and it's kind of along the lines of what Secretary Cook said, that it's a matter of educating the public of its DWI problem and the horrific results of DWI-related accidents.
I can't remember a lot of things in my life, but I can remember those death notifications as if they were yesterday. I can remember the look on the woman's face or the various faces, because it was always the male, who ended up dying. I don't know what sort of societal statement that is. But generally speaking, it was grab the priest, grab the minister, go knock on the door, and that look in that woman's eyes is just profound. I can't even remember for sure what I had for breakfast yesterday, but I can remember vividly the look in that woman's eyes. And again, I probably will bring this up throughout the program. This whole concept of drinking and driving is something that I think society takes more seriously, but not seriously enough. I still think that it's just, I can't say that it's a joke on the part of most people, but I think way too many people drink and drive, and I think people's perceptions and abilities to drive are affected by one drink. I know that doesn't constitute the legal limit in New Mexico or any other part of the country, but even one drink is enough to affect you profoundly.
It is, and it's a matter of impairment. It's not a matter of maybe staggering or not being able to communicate verbally and talk or coordination, but it's impairment. Your reaction time is greatly affected. Your depth perception is greatly affected. And when you take all those things and you multiply them by the speed of a vehicle, particularly on the interstates, your reaction time is really cut down in half. And, we talk about these really horrific accidents. Well, when you have speeds in excess of 60, 70 miles an hour and they collide with somebody, well, you just take the speeds of two vehicles, add that speed, and it's 150, 160 mile an hour impact crash. And like you said, when you have to show up at those accident scenes and decide what body belongs to what vehicle and then look for ID and start to think about how are we going to tell the family, and again, like you said, getting a hold of a priest or somebody to make that a little bit more comprehensible when you approach families. Geez, it's not something a law enforcement officer looks forward to doing, especially repeatedly.
Yeah,
repeatedly in their career.
I had in one case where a guy hit a bridge abutment and he was drunk pulling body parts out of a tree. I mean, that's, you know, I understand that it's legal to drink. I drink. I'm not, the issue here, I don't think, is drinking. The issue here is drinking and driving. I don't think the issue is not driving drunk. I think the issue is having any alcohol at all and getting behind the wheel of a car. So that's just my own political editorializing. You guys can feel free to disagree with me. And I drink. I mean, I do. I simply don't drive when I drink, period. I don't have one beer. If I'm driving, especially if I'm driving my motorcycle, I drink Coke.
Correct. And I think that many, many times, particularly after a long day's work or after a person is exhausted, and when that one drink has a much more profound physical effect, that one drink might be just enough to have you impaired again to get you likely to be involved in that motor vehicle accident.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Deputy Secretary Paul Cook of the New Mexico Department of Public Safety, and we're talking also on the phone Captain Greg Toya. He is with the New Mexico Department of Public Safety and with the New Mexico State Police. When you go to the show notes, I'll include contact points for the National Criminal Justice Association and Paul Cook and to Greg Toya, and I'm quite sure that they have a website that relates to all of this. Okay, so fatalities went down dramatically in New Mexico. You have 100 days and nights of summer, which I'm assuming is this widespread law enforcement, not just the New Mexico State Police, but as you said, allied law enforcement agencies, everybody together doing the checks, doing the roadblocks, doing what is necessary to reduce drunk driving in the state of New Mexico. You're talking about public outreach, and one of the things that we're doing now is part of public outreach, and this show is heard all over the world, so it's just not New Mexico who's going to be hearing this, but people from throughout the world. You know, so what in terms of all of this is the magic ingredient that brought down the number of DWI accidents and deaths in New Mexico from third in the country to 17th in the country?
Well, let me just give you some stats from our 100 Days and Nights of Summer in 2007.
Okay.
It ran from June 1st through September 8th. The total citations and arrests during that time was 89,926.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you realize that every one of those people that got a citation are going to be talking to their neighbor or somebody and say, dang, you know, I got cited for A, B, or C.
Right.
You know, and that thing, that spreads the word.
Yeah.
As Captain Toya said, we had 2,216 DWI arrests. We conducted actually 232 checkpoints. Now, that's mm-hmm. not just the state police. That's throughout all law enforcement entities
right.
in the state.
Understood.
The saturation patrols he talked about, we conducted 714.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, New Mexico is a fairly large state. We've got 121,000 square miles here. So look at that, 714 is a lot, but it doesn't cover everything.
Well, New Mexico is a drop-dead gorgeous state, number one, and there are magazines devoted to driving in New Mexico. I remember reading them as a child and just looking at these wide-open spaces for those of us on the East Coast living in the Baltimore-Washington metropolitan area. Sometimes I'm extremely envious, especially when I'm on my motorcycle. So the point is that New Mexico is a pretty spread-out state. I know it has its metropolitan area, but you know, you probably have parts of the state that are that the patrol potential is limited.
You can drive an hour and a half and not see anything in some places. So.
Right. So how do you patrol those sort of areas? How do you make it stick in those wide open spaces?
Well, that's what we were talking about. Our saturation patrols is we designate a handful of officers to patrol a stretch of road where maybe typically most law enforcement agencies will not be out there.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period of time, when you have a handful of officers that are mandated to patrol that particular stretch at a particular time on a particular day of the week,
mm-hmm.
it has a very positive effect, because if you look at your information, and if you're having a problem with accidents, DWI arrests, things along those lines, you can strategically place your officers. So, like the secretary said, there are places here in New Mexico that are very rural, more or less lightly patrolled. So when we do these projects, we figure out where we need to concentrate on, and as a result of that, we've had some very positive results.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also... Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say that's also working. I want everybody to keep in mind that's working with all other law enforcement agencies, because some agencies, you know, are strapped with manpower, equipment, training, knowledge, and we try and include everybody to get on the same bandwagon and help. So it's a unified enforcement project.
Okay. Now, I represent a community corrections agency, a federal community corrections agency in Washington, D.C. So I've got to ask this question. Are you working with your correctional counterparts, either the Department of Corrections or the Division of Corrections, and parole and probation authorities?
We are. We do work with them. On this particular issue, it's a little bit after the fact. And what I mean is, if, in fact, somebody is arrested and charged with a DWI incident, when we do our homework on these types of cases, we'll find out if, in fact, somebody is on probation, parole. And at that point in time, corrections is contacted. And then we do follow-up work with the conditions of probation, parole. We just don't put them through the judicial system. We work with parole, corrections, and we try and get them the education that they need in order to complete the judicial side of this incident, but try and get them the counseling and the help and the education they need so that hopefully they won't become a repeated offender.
One of the things that we have here in Washington, D.C. is we have like 3,000 people on our caseload, and we're pretty tough on them. We provide individual counseling and group counseling to the people who are involved in the drinking and driving program here, but we have a lot of contact with them. We do a lot of surprise visits. We do a lot of enforcement, but at the same time, we try to get them the treatment that they need. A lot of these individuals, I understand somebody getting behind the wheel of a car and they believe it's a mistake and you know, it's never happened before, it'll never happen again. But some of these people end up, you know, being violators two and three times. Some of these people have serious issues with alcoholism and drugs, and quite frankly, they need the treatment. And part of what we do beyond provide enforcement is we provide the treatment component as well. So, and I think that that's a pretty serious and necessary part to all of this. Do you agree?
Oh, I absolutely agree. It's not only a law enforcement issue, it's a society issue. And you can't arrest enough people to make a positive impact. It has to go hand in hand with education. And once you start to educate, it has to start, I should say, firstly, at a very young age. Most kids have alcohol available to them when they're 6 years old. 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't wait until they're in mid school or junior high or high school, you got to get into the elementary school setting to start to plant that seed that tells young kids alcohol and its effects are devastating. And you're exactly right. We try and do that at a very young age. We try and make the connection alcohol and drugs combined or separately have the same horrific, devastating effects.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I might add to that part of our probationary process in New Mexico right now has got a ignition interlock device requirement.
So that's a great idea. Explain what that is, Paul.
When a person is convicted of a DWI, they are required to get an ignition interlock device installed on their car, and that is basically a mini breathalyzer they have to blow into this before it releases the ignition for them to start their car.
Mm-hmm.
It works very well, and there are some pretty severe penalties for bypassing it by having someone else blow into the device for them.
Mm-hmm.
So
Well,
it's just another way that we can keep track or try and inhibit those repeat offenders from going back behind the wheel keep them from getting behind the wheel while they are intoxicated.
We've even gone so far as to stick GPS devices on them, global positioning system devices, and we've gone so far as to basically say, stay home. You know, you can go to work, you can come back, but after that, you've got to stay home. So that way, that's another little trick that it doesn't matter whether or not they have, and I totally agree, by the way, with the locking devices where you have to blow into it to check your alcohol level. But some of these people are of such danger to themselves, to their families, and larger society, they're just told stay home. So in terms of summarizing, gentlemen, where do we go? What do we want the public to do? Because certainly the good citizens of New Mexico, and again, I emphasize the beautiful, lovely state of New Mexico, they're going to hear this, and I hopefully they're going to take it to heart. But you're going to be talking to people in Australia, England, Canada, and other countries throughout the world, for that matter. And that's one of the advantages of doing these programs via the internet. What do we say to them? What do we say to larger society in terms of alcohol and drinking and driving? I mean, the obvious one is don't do it.
That's correct. I agree with don't do it. But I also, reiterate my feeling, personal feeling, is the constant and continual reminding by public education, either through TV, billboards, handouts, mailers. It has to continually be reinforced. You know, number one, you drink, you drive, you lose. But number two, you are so severely impaired when you're drinking. You really are operating a deadly weapon. You're not operating a motor vehicle.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
I agree, and you mentioned a really important question, and that is, don't do it. Most people want to know why. Why can't I do that? And I think that it's incumbent upon letting everybody know. And when I say everybody, it's starting again with the younger generation, high school, college, the professional section, and all the way up in with people that are older, and sharing these horrific scenes with them and showing them the results of consuming alcohol, whether it's at a party, a restaurant, sports events, wherever it may be, because all those different venues have the same results. And people need to realize that even in a socializing environment, that one or two drinks of alcohol could be just enough to have you impaired when you get behind the wheel. So I think we need to continue educating the horrific results of drinking and driving. We need to continue funding law enforcement agencies around the country and the world so that we have enough officers out there to enforce DWI laws, and we also need to have a judicial component that's going to do its part to follow through with either convicting and hopefully monitoring these individuals as they're kicked out of the judicial system and transferred into probation and parole.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of all those groups.
I think, and the one other thing that we need to add in there is the legislative group. We need to have our politicians fully educated and aware of what we're doing so we get their support, and they're the ones that give us the funding, and we need the funding and the political support to make any of these things happen.
Absolutely.
Well, it is once again, I think, a larger, we all agree that it's this larger societal issue, yet I constantly come across either personal examples or societal examples of people who just don't understand that giving, you know, allowing the son to go down to a resort town in the state of Maryland and allowing them to take alcohol down with them on the premise that they not consume that, I'm talking about people under the age of 21, on the premise that they not consume it while they're in the car. I think that's playing with fire. Some people are going to say that's going way too far. I don't believe it's going way too far. It just strikes me that our politicians really need to understand that the funding needs to be there. The larger society really needs to understand that, you know, I just wish I had a whole bunch of people along as in my days in the state police of crawling through the superstructure of a car to get at somebody who's mangled in that car and who's drunk and try to save their lives. And you come out of it with their blood on your uniform. I mean, I don't know how graphic to get with this, but that's our experience. That's all the experience that we've had in the law enforcement community. You don't forget any of that stuff. And I just sometimes wish somehow, some way you could share that experience directly with the larger public. Somehow, some way, I think that they would fully understand what drinking and driving truly means.
Absolutely. I think along the line of sight, the smell, and you can back me on this, I'm sure, but pulling up to an accident, the smell of gasoline, oil, the smell of blood mixed with alcohol, it's a horrific smell that seems to stay with you for
forever.
Your entire life.
Forever.
Forever. And if you're at a restaurant or with loved ones and you reminisce about that, it's like it happened that very morning.
That's right.
And it does not go away.
I can smell it now.
Oh, yeah. I can remember picking up a toddler at an accident. And, you know, the only thing holding that little child's body together was the skin. It was like picking up a 10-pound bag of potatoes in the bag.
Mm-hmm. And I think the
result of a DWI-related incident.
Yep. It's I could, both of us, all three of us, could just go on endlessly about this. So I think we're pretty much leaving it there and close. Deputy Secretary Paul Cook, it's been a real pleasure. Deputy Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Public Safety, and Captain Greg Toya, again, New Mexico Department of Public Safety with the New Mexico State Police, talking about the 100 days and nights of summer. Within the notes of the program, ladies and gentlemen, we'll give you contact points for both the Deputy Secretary and Captain Toya, and website addresses to gain more information about the 100 days and nights of summer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I am your host, Len Sipes. I want you all to have a very, very pleasant day.